Državni izpitni center. Splošna matura 2018. Lepo pozdravljeni. Pričenja se reševanje izpitne pole slušnega razumevanja angleščine. Izpitna pola je sestavljena iz dveh delov, dela A in dela B. Vsak del vsebuje govorjeno izhodiščno besedilo in nalogo, ki se nanj nanaša. Najprej boste nalogo prebrali in jo nato med poslušanjem besedila sproti reševali. Vsako besedilo boste poslušali po dvakrat. Začetek in konec besedila bo označeval takle zvočni znak. Rešitve, ki jih pišite z nalivnim peresom ali s kemičnim svinčnikom, upisujte v izpitno polo v zato predvideni prostor. Pišite čitljivo in skladno s pravopisnimi pravili. Če se zmotite, napisano prečrtajte in rešitev zapišite na novo. Nečitljivi zapisi in nejasni popravki bodo ocenjeni z nič točkami. Zaupajte vase in v svoje zmožnosti. Želimo vam veliko uspeha. Poslušajte pozorno. Odprite izpitno polo.
Section A. You will hear part of a radio program in which Janine Di Giovanni talks about Josephine Bonaparte, wife of Napoleon Bonaparte. You will hear the recording twice. Now read the task.
Janine Di Giovanni, tell me why you've nominated Josephine Bonaparte today.
I think, first of all, she was very much in the middle of history in this incredible period of time. She was very involved in the political life of France. And the other reason was that I very much admire her because she was a woman who loved with her head rather than her heart.
What do you mean?
She was very calculating. She was, for the times, very promiscuous. She had many lovers before Napoleon and after. And her choice was always very much thought out about how it could get her from the start, from a very provincial 15-year-old girl who arrived in France and then basically made her way through Parisian society, learning manners and politesse as she went along, climbing higher and higher on the political ladder and very much being a woman behind the scenes, influencing men. By all accounts, she was absolutely mesmerizing and a very important figure in history.
It's really notable how many of the men and women who come before this program, so to speak, as great lives, have some kind of major cultural fracture in their background. Now, Josephine didn't come from France, did she?
No, she came from the West Indies,
yes.
And her family had a sugar plantation. It was devastated by a hurricane when she was young, and she suffered from that. And she was sent to France at 15 to marry an aristocrat. She was not attractive. And what was interesting is when she got off the boat...
Not attractive.
She had a beautiful voice and a lovely figure, but when she was a young girl, she was very unsophisticated, she was provincial, and he apparently took one look at her and was shocked
by it. And she wasn't called Josephine, was she? She was called Rose.
She was called Rose. Napoleon changed her name to Josephine. So she really reinvented herself. And for me, like many women who have been powerful sexually and used their sex appeal, in a sense, to get ahead, like Pamela Harriman, the late Pamela Harriman, who rose to become the ambassador, the American ambassador of France, and was not a great beauty, but used her allure, her personal charm, her voice. Mm. Josephine apparently was notorious for her voice, which Napoleon described as silvery. And she basically had men enthralled by her.
Here's a, a question. It interests me particularly. Do you think that the significant thing about her and the thing that interests you about her is the power she exerted over the most powerful man in Europe, or is it just the bizarre trajectory of her life? Are you going to make a case for her influence?
She didn't fight the battles. She wasn't there fighting the Egyptian campaign or the Italian campaign. But let's put it this way. While Napoleon was there, she was on his mind constantly. When he was in Egypt and he found out that she...
But is that all a woman can do, be on a man's mind?
Well, that's a pretty big thing. If you're fighting a major battle and you're completely obsessed sexually and otherwise by a woman, and he was. He himself, when she met him, she was the one who held the cards. He was small, unwashed, unattractive. She was the one that brought him into society. While he was with her, he then grew into a great man.
Now you will hear the recording again.
Janine DiGiovanni, tell me why you've nominated Josephine Bonaparte today.
I think, first of all, she was very much in the middle of history in this incredible period of time. She was very involved in the political life of France. And the other reason was that I very much admire her because she was a woman who loved with her head rather than her heart.
What do you mean?
She was very calculating. She was, for the times, very promiscuous. She had many lovers before Napoleon and after. And her choice was always very much thought out about how it could get her from the start, from a very provincial 15-year-old girl who arrived in France and then basically made her way through Parisian society, learning manners and politesse as she went along, climbing higher and higher on the political ladder and very much being a woman behind the scenes, influencing men. By all accounts, she was absolutely mesmerizing and a very important figure in history.
It's really notable how many of the men and women who come before this program, so to speak, as great lives, have some kind of major cultural fracture in their background. Now, Josephine didn't come from France, did she?
No, she came from the West Indies,
yes.
And her family had a sugar plantation. It was devastated by a hurricane when she was young, and she suffered from that. And she was sent to France at 15 to marry an aristocrat. She was not attractive. And what was interesting is when she got off the boat...
Not attractive.
She had a beautiful voice and a lovely figure, but when she was a young girl, she was very unsophisticated, she was provincial, and he apparently took one look at her and was shocked.
And she wasn't called Josephine, was she? She was called Rose.
She was called Rose. Napoleon changed her name to Josephine. So she really reinvented herself. And for me, like many women who have been powerful sexually and used their sex appeal, in a sense, to get ahead, like Pamela Harriman, the late Pamela Harriman, who rose to become the American ambassador of France, and was not a great beauty, but used her allure, her personal charm, her voice. Mm. Josephine apparently was notorious for her voice, which Napoleon described as silvery. And she basically had men enthralled by her.
Here's a question. It interests me particularly. Do you think that the significant thing about her and the thing that interests you about her is the power she exerted over the most powerful man in Europe, or is it just the bizarre trajectory of her life? Are you going to make a case for her influence?
She didn't fight the battles. She wasn't there fighting the Egyptian campaign or the Italian campaign. But let's put it this way. While Napoleon was there, she was on his mind constantly. When he was in Egypt and he found out that she...
But is that all a woman can do, be on a man's mind?
Well, that's a pretty big thing. If you're fighting a major battle and you're completely obsessed sexually and otherwise by a woman, and he was, he himself, when she met him, she was the one who held the cards. He was small, unwashed, unattractive. She was the one that brought him into society. While he was with her, he then grew into a great man.
This is the end of Section A. Section B. You will hear an interview with Maria Larkin. You will hear the recording twice. Now read the task.
All our guests this morning have pursued a dream in one way or another, but perhaps none more so than Maria Larkin, who, in the 1970s, backpacked around South America, fell in love with Peru, and returned years later to rescue and restore a Victorian steamship called Yavari that lay abandoned on Lake Titicaca. It's an incredible story, which Maria relates in her book, The Ship, the Lady and the Lake, and as it happens, this year is the 150th anniversary of that ship arriving on the lake. Maria, on your first trip there, Peru seems to have really got under your skin. In what way was that?
Well, I think I'd come from Colombia, Ecuador. I mean, they've all got their charms, but Peru was somehow absolutely fascinating. I mean, the geography of the place, you can go from the desert over the Andes and plunge down into the rainforest in just one day. And the bird life and the people, of course, the whole thing is music and enjoyment and colour and fun and the food, everything seemed to. And, of course, the mix of the sort of Indian people with the Spanish is quite complicated, so that was challenging in itself.
So it was a challenging and exciting place. But interestingly, on your earliest trips, you had a premonition that you would return there. It was going to play more of a part in your life.
Yes, funnily enough, it was a place called Pizac, and it was very high. And I got halfway up the trail to the site, and just had this very strong premonition that I would come back. I was thankful because I was completely weary by this time. And it meant that I didn't have to go on walking up because I knew I'd be back. It was just a very strong sense that I would come back.
How fascinating. And, of course, yeah. You have got extremely involved. And you've been led to believe that the ship Yavari that we mentioned that was marooned on Lake Titicaca had been built by your grandfather's firm, Yarrow's. I understand it hadn't, in fact, but you still wanted to get involved with it and restore it. Why was that?
Oh, you couldn't have left her. You couldn't have left her. She was stuck there in the corner of the port, just abandoned. I mean, completely abandoned, would have been scrapped within the foreseeable future. And with such an incredible history, I mean, to have been walked up the Andes piece by piece, carried by mules, and reassembled. I mean, the journey took 6 years to do, not because of inefficiencies, but because all sorts of historic things happened. There was a tsunami, there was peasants' revolt, there was another invasion from Spain. All these things delayed the whole journey.
So it had taken a huge amount of time. And it started off in West Ham in London, is that right? It was originally built there.
It did. That was the Thames Ironworks and Shipbuilding Company. And actually we're in talks at the moment with them to get involved with their community trust and have some young people do the expedition in the footsteps of.
Oh, how fascinating. Yeah. To actually follow the route.
Yes.
Hopefully not take 6 years about it. How did local people react to your plans? And you said, look, there was this wreck, as you said, that was going to be scrapped on the side of the lake. And you said, actually, I think we should restore it.
Yes, they thought we were completely mad. Loco is the Spanish for mad, and we got a lot of that. And they were quite dismissive. I mean, they would sit watching us, trying to restore this old hulk, really.
I mean, looking at the cover of your book, with before and after shots of Yavari, you know, I can see that. I mean, it must have been an extraordinary undertaking. It looks beautiful now, but it was pretty much a hulk at the time.
Now you will hear the recording again.
All our guests this morning have pursued a dream in one way or another, but perhaps none more so than Maria Larkin, who, in the 1970s, backpacked around South America, fell in love with Peru, and returned years later to rescue and restore a Victorian steamship called Yavari that lay abandoned on Lake Titicaca. It's an incredible story, which Muriel relates in her book, The Ship, the Lady and the Lake. And as it happens, this year is the 150th anniversary of that ship arriving on the lake. Muriel, on your first trip there, Peru seems to have really got under your skin. In what way was that?
Well, I think I'd come from Colombia, Ecuador. I mean, they've all got their charms, but Peru was somehow absolutely fascinating. I mean, the geography of the place, you can go from the desert over the Andes and plunge down into the rainforest in just one day. And the bird life and the people, of course, the whole thing is music and enjoyment and colour and fun and the food, everything seemed to. And, of course, the mix of the sort of Indian people with the Spanish is quite complicated, so that was challenging in itself.
So it was a challenging and exciting place. But interestingly, on your earliest trips, you had a premonition that you would return there. It was going to play more of a part in your life.
Yes, funnily enough, it was a place called Pisac, and it was very high. And I got halfway up the trail to the site, and just had this very strong premonition that I would come back. I was thankful because I was completely weary by this time. And it meant that I didn't have to go on walking up because I knew I'd be back. It was just a very strong sense that I would come back.
How fascinating. And, of course, you have got extremely involved. And you've been led to believe that the ship Yavari that we mentioned, that was marooned on Lake Titicaca, had been built by your grandfather's firm, Yarrow's. I understand it hadn't, in fact, but you still wanted to get involved with it and restore it. Why was that?
Oh, you couldn't have left her. You couldn't have left her. She was stuck there in the corner of the port, just abandoned. I mean, completely abandoned, would have been scrapped within the foreseeable future. And with such an incredible history, I mean, to have been walked up the Andes piece by piece, carried by mules, and reassembled. I mean, the journey took 6 years to do, not because of inefficiencies, but because all sorts of historic things happened. There was a tsunami, there was peasants' revolt, there was another invasion from Spain. All these things delayed the whole journey.
So it took a huge amount of time. And it started off in West Ham in London, is that right? It was originally built there.
It did. That was the Thames Ironworks and Shipbuilding Company. And actually, we're in talks at the moment with them to get involved with their community trust and have some young people do the expedition in the footsteps of.
Oh, how fascinating. Yeah. To actually follow the route.
Yes.
Hopefully not take 6 years about it. How did local people react to your plans? And you said, look, there was this wreck, as you say, that was going to be scrapped on the side of the lake. And you said, actually, I think we should restore it.
Yes, they thought we were completely mad. Loco is the Spanish for mad. And we got a lot of that. And they were quite dismissive. I mean, they would sit watching us trying to restore this old hulk, really.
I mean, looking at the cover of your book, with before and after shots of Yavari, you know, I can see that. I mean, it must have been an extraordinary undertaking. It looks beautiful now, but it was pretty much a hulk at the time.
This is the end of Section B.
Končuje se slušno preverjanje angleščine. Nehajte pisati, zaprite izpitno polo in jo skupaj z ocenjevalnim obrazcem položite na rob mize. Nasvidenje in srečno!